We are joined now by one of his former teammates with the Birmingham Barons, Scott Tedder. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
I'm fascinated by this part of the doc because I will admit that as a young person in Chicago and a huge Bulls fan, I didn't pay a lot of attention when MJ went to the White Sox. I was sort of just maybe waiting subconsciously for him to get back to basketball. Tell me what it was like to be a teammate of his. We've heard he was a good guy to the rest of the team.
Yeah, he was a great guy. He knew the hassle that he was going to bring, obviously, with the media. You know, if he wasn't there, we had, you know, three local people there to cover the games. And when he showed up our first game, we had like 130 media people from all over the world covering the game. So it was quite excitement, and playing in front of packed houses every day was a great adventure and a great time to spend with Michael.
So, Scott, what makes you automatically cool in any social circle is you've got a Michael Jordan story. And if you have a Michael Jordan story, I imagine that that's a pretty cool one to tell, given any social gathering you may be at. So let's go back to that, back in 94, and you guys had just come off a Sunday morning game in which you won, but MJ went 0-for-5 in that baseball game, and you guys decided, heck, Michael Jordan's a part of our team. This might be a perfect time to play some pickup basketball. MJ and three other coaches versus you, who is a very good basketball player as well, and three other teammates. Take me through how that experience went down. Me and Sarah just listening at one of those social gatherings. Tell us the story.
It was pretty amazing. As you have to realize, back in 1994, there wasn't really no social media, no cell phones. So on the way back from Huntsville, Alabama, we decided to play a pickup game in a local apartment complex. So we played and picked up. And Michael heard stories about myself playing. I was Division III Player of the Year in 1988. He knew I could play a little bit. But obviously he put me on the other team. And as you know, when you play pickup games, you go to 16. Well, he let me hit about two or three threes and a couple layups. And my team got the game point, 15. And he looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, "Scott, you're not going to touch the ball again." And I said, "Yeah, right, MJ." I said, "Try it." And then, of course, 15 minutes later, they win 17-15, and I didn't touch the ball after when he said that.
That is such a perfect MJ story. Scott Tedder, former MJ teammate with the Birmingham Barons, joins us. One of the interesting things was you mentioned all the publicity, all the people that came to see you, both media and fans. The reason that they started MJ at AA instead of lower as a guy who hadn't played since he was 17 years old was because those facilities at the lower levels could not accommodate the media. Did it bother any other players or you that he was inserted in a little bit higher than the average guy at his talent level?
I don't think so, especially like you said earlier, just with the facilities here in Birmingham. I still live in Hoover, and it's probably one of the best AA stadiums in the country at the time. And they knew they could accommodate the people. It said about 13,000 people. And then the parks around in the Southern League could also accommodate the media and also the television and also the crowd. So I think it was a great opportunity for him to show the talent that he had in AA. And as you know, most of the top prospects are in AA. So I think the White Sox wanted to find out if you really could hit some of the top prospects in the other divisions as far as the Southern League.
You know, Terry Francona, the manager of that team, along with several others, have said, and maybe this is just adding to the legend of MJ and whom he was, but there was this belief that if he would have stuck with baseball, he would have been playing on the big stage in the majors. Scott, having watched him closely, do you believe that to be true, or is that people just paying homage to one of the greatest athletes to ever live?
Well, he is one of the greatest athletes to ever live, but yeah, you got to realize he hadn't played baseball for 16 years. And you send him straight to AA, and I know everybody talks about his 202 average. But you have to realize he had 30 stolen bases and 51 RBIs for a guy that hadn't played baseball for 16, 17 years. And the way he went around his business, probably just like he did in basketball, is we'd have early BP at 3, and we'd pull up to the stadium, and he'd already be done hitting his round. So he took early BP, he took his regular BP, and in some games when he had an off game, he would leave the lights on, and he would take BP after the game. So we knew he wanted to get to the big leagues, obviously, because that was one of his dad's dreams for him to play Major League Baseball. So he gave everything he had that summer that we had with him in 94.
Yeah, it's sort of crazy to even still think about the idea of the greatest basketball player of all time just switching over to baseball. But even crazier that it happened to be a strikeout, like a strike year where we don't know what would have happened. If not for the strike, would he have stuck with it or would he have still decided to go back to basketball? We're talking to Scott Tedder, former MJ teammate with the Birmingham Barons. Did you notice anything? I remember Terry Francona talking about how MJ was like, so do we fly everywhere? Oh, really? We take a bus? Oh, really? It's a terrible bus? Let me work on that. Do you remember anything else notably that got better when he was around? Was he buying everybody dinner every night? I mean, he was still getting his Bulls salary from Reinsdorf as a baseball player, which is crazy. Reinsdorf was like, well, he's always been underpaid, so I'll just keep paying him $3 million to play double-A ball. So he better have been paying for more stuff than just a bus.
Yeah, and you guys probably heard the story of the bus. When we pulled into Birmingham, there was four buses lined up at the stadium, and he walked through them and picked out the one he wanted to travel in. And all the stories are true. He never flew to any town. Like on a Friday night, if we played in Birmingham, we had a nine-hour bus drive to Orlando. You'd get around the bus after the game and drive all the way down to Orlando. So, and as far as, yeah, taking care of us, he definitely took care of us. The only problem was, when we did go out, we had to call restaurants ahead of time, and they would have to block off a section so we could just eat in peace. And then he would pick up the bill, obviously. And then, you know, post-game meals, when he wasn't there, we would just have pizza and something else. But when he was there, there was five-course meals laid out because the club wanted to get his tip. So they would bring in some of the best food in those particular towns to feed us after games.
Scott, bringing out MJ's, we all know about the basketball game and the strengths, and I can't name any weaknesses. As we watch as you were able to watch him progress as a baseball player, what part of his game stood out the most where you're like, this is probably his strength in baseball, and this is where he can improve? Not so much the improvements, but the strengths you saw in his game.
I think the strengths was probably on the base path. Obviously, like I said, him being 6'6" and his long strides, he could steal bases like it was nothing. And then as the season went on, you could start to see his power come along. You know, when he first got there, he'd hit the ball to the warning track and it would kind of die. And then by the end of August, beginning of August, he had three home runs. And he was starting to drive the ball in the gap and start to hit home runs. And then also the RBIs, he had 51 RBIs. So you could really start to see the turnaround. And like when Sarah said earlier, it was because of the strike. I think if he would have stuck it out, he probably would have been in the big leagues the next spring. But he was a big union guy in the NBA, so he didn't want anything to do with the MLB strike.
Yeah. Scott, I loved that Jordan said, you know, what's the story you tell at parties? I'm curious if there's another story, maybe even something about MJ, that those of us who will never have the opportunity to just go to dinner or hang out on a long bus ride and chat, what do you remember talking to him about? What did he share? I mean, I've been surprised to find he was a massive Anita Baker fan. Is there something like that that stood out to you?
Yeah, Anita Baker and SWV at the time. Yeah, it was a great time. I think the best story I could tell, there's plenty of stories in the summer, but in 2003, and this is just a personal thing that came back to Michael, in 2003 I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Well, Michael found out about it. He was playing for the Wizards, and I was still in Birmingham, and he told me to drive over to Atlanta. So I went over to Atlanta, watched the game, and then George, his bodyguard, came and got me out of the stands, and we all went down in the locker room, and we just kind of hung out. He's like, man, give me a big hug and wanted to make sure I was all right. I was like on the second treatment of chemo, and he was just, you know, invited me to Atlanta to make sure I was okay and make sure everything was all right, my family
was
okay. And then, you know, so, you know, with this last dance, a lot of people are saying, oh, he's you know, he's rude, he's not nice. But things he does that people didn't know really goes beyond what he is on TV. And then one other story, he asked me when my birthday was, because we were kind of tight because we always talked about basketball. And he said, your birthday's tomorrow. And I said, yes, sir. He said, meet me in the lobby at 6 a.m. So we were in Memphis. So I didn't know idea what we were doing. So we get in the car and we go to Southwind. He plays golf. And he goes, you ready to go back? And I said, no. I said, yeah, let's go back to the hotel. And he said, no, we're going to stop by the Nike Corp, not the corporate office, but their warehouse, and I'm going to let you go shopping. That's your birthday present. So it was pretty weird. You know, all the people lined up, and they gave him a standing ovation when we pulled up, and we walked in, and he did all his media stuff. And I went back in the store and did all my shopping and got three full boxes of Nike stuff. And he says, is that all you want? And I was like, yeah. I said, I think that's enough. And he said, well, happy birthday. And then we went back to the hotel, and then we played Memphis that day. So that's the little things that he did as teammates, little things he did for us on the Barons.
That's awesome.
I mean, yeah, I wanted to ask another question. I don't think I have one. Like, after hearing those stories, I mean, Scott, that's really why we had you on, because we knew that your hooping connection. I figured you two had a relationship probably a little bit more elevated than some of your teammates. And to hear those stories, you clearly are the coolest guy at any party when you share those, because you had us hooked listening here for these few minutes.
All my stories are just like stalking him. I don't have any where he's voluntarily hanging out with me.
Yeah. Well, right now I'm hanging at home.
right. We all are, Scott. Even MJ.
Yes.
Are you well now? Are you healthy?
Yes, I am. I am.
Oh, good. Glad
17 years. 17 years cancer free. So it's great.
Awesome. Very cool.